This is The Political Scene, a weekly conversation with New Yorker writers and editors about politics. It's Friday, April 14th. I'm Dorothy Wickenden, executive editor of The New Yorker. Over the last week or two, President Trump appears to have changed his mind on a few major diplomatic fronts. Two of them converged on Wednesday when Secretary of State Rex Tillerson met with Vladimir Putin in Moscow, and Trump gave a press conference at the White House with the Secretary General of NATO. The subject of Russia came up in the wake of the administration's missile strikes in Syria.
It would be wonderful, as we were discussing just a little while ago, if NATO and our country could get along with Russia. Right now, we're not getting along with Russia at all. We may be at an all-time low in terms of relationship with Russia. This is built for a long period of time. But we're going to see what happens. Putin is the leader of Russia. Russia's a strong country. We're a very, very strong country. We're going to see how that all works out.
Joshua Yaffa joins me from Moscow to discuss how the unpredictability of the Trump administration looks from Russians' perspective. Hey, Josh, thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
Putin took a lot of pride in brokering the 2013 deal with Bashar al-Assad, in which Assad claimed to have given up his arsenal of chemical weapons. Putin also went to great lengths to help Trump get elected. What was Putin's reaction to the administration's strikes?
It's probably worth talking about what Putin's reaction likely was, because, of course, we don't really know and won't probably ever really know to Assad's use of chemical weapons a few days before, what precipitated those strikes. My sense is that Putin was most likely angry, embarrassed, upset, because, as you said, this deal brokered by Putin in 2013, agreeing to essentially shepherd or kind of midwife a process by which Syrian chemical weapons would be taken out of the country, and that something broke down in that process. And I think that that takes what had been a huge diplomatic coup and victory for Putin and turns it into something very unwelcome. That's the backstory to then what happened just a few days later when Trump ordered the military strikes, which was an event that perhaps in a similar way, Putin did not welcome at all any sort of U.S. military intervention of that type, especially in a country where Russia has both diplomatic interests and military forces on the ground. It's going to be something that really raises Putin's ire.
From our perspective over here, this was a man who campaigned saying we should not get involved in Syria. And at every opportunity, Trump appeared to want to be a compliant partner with Putin.
And that's why these missile strikes were seen in Moscow as the latest and certainly the sharpest and most alarming from the Kremlin's perspective sign that Trump, the president, is not shaping up to resemble much Trump, the candidate. A lot of Russian officials, I'm guessing here, Putin himself, was always a bit more skeptical and restrained in their enthusiasm for Trump, knowing or suspecting that he wouldn't be able to deliver on a lot of the points that he was promising on. But these missiles, Tomahawk missile strikes, were the clearest example so far of Trump essentially doing a full 180 and doing a full 180 on an issue that is of central importance to Kremlin foreign policy, to Putin's own vision of Russia's role in the world. And really, you know, up until last week, the Kremlin really had a great deal of influence in Syria, even if it had a great deal of frustration with the kind of position Russia was put in, which effectively meant to prop up the regime, that meant propping up Assad. Personally, I think that that was something, that is something the Russians aren't fully comfortable with, but don't have any real alternatives to.
You made an interesting point in a piece you wrote for NewYorker.com just yesterday about Putin's own reputation for unpredictability. And I'd like you to talk just a little bit about that.
You know, over the past couple of years, Putin has developed a go-to set of tactics for pursuing Russian foreign policy objectives. And it's essentially based around a combination of a willingness to use force, a willingness to escalate, and unpredictability. And the combination of those two approaches has given him a kind of leg up, allowed him to punch above his weight geopolitically. Putin was able to project the image of someone who was willing to risk more, do more, where other world leaders, say Barack Obama or Angela Merkel, were wary of entering into a spiral of escalation with an unpredictable nuclear-armed power. It was a kind of updated strategy of Nixon's madman theory, which is essentially to have your strategic adversary, in this case Nixon was originally talking about the Soviet Union, think of you as a kind of madman with your finger on the nuclear button. And Putin, I think, purposely was able to cultivate that image in a way that gave him more opportunities to drive events than otherwise Russia, given its geopolitical, economic, military might on paper, might otherwise have earned for itself. And
well,
I think
Trump would argue exactly the same thing. He, in fact, did during the campaign. I'm not going to show my hand. I'm going to be unpredictable. And he would say this is one of his great strengths.
I think we would, as the population of the world, be wary of a kind of madman contest to see who can out-madman the other. That's certainly, I think, a worrying state of events for all of us who have to live on this planet. But certainly, the missile strikes forced Putin, at least for the moment, to rethink that strategy. Because, as you say, there's kind of a new madman, in quotes, in town.
Hi, it's David Remnick. If you're enjoying this podcast, you might enjoy even more of what The New Yorker has to offer. Becoming a subscriber gives you unlimited access to The New Yorker, including Pulitzer Prize-winning reporting, insightful cultural commentary, and fiction and poetry. You'll also enjoy our delightful cartoons, crossword puzzles, narrated stories, and much more. This past year, our readers were gripped by Ronan Farrow's profile of Elon Musk, Heidi Blake's extraordinary tale about Dubai's runaway princesses, and much more. Visit NewYorker.com to gain access to all this and more. Use the code POD15, P-O-D-1-5, to secure a 15% discount on a yearly digital subscription. That's POD15 for a 15% discount.
So the agenda with Tillerson in Moscow was very different than Putin had expected it to be. How did that play out?
The expectations, say, a few months ago, or maybe even a few weeks ago, were that this meeting would be not necessarily right away the great kind of capstone to a new era of detente and friendly relations between Russia and the United States, but at least the beginning of a new relationship. That period of positive expectation gave way to something more resembling crisis management, especially after the chemical weapons attack and then the missile strike. Trump, Tillerson, others, Nikki Haley at the UN, really criticizing Russia quite harshly for allowing, maybe even covering up for the Syrian chemical weapons strike. And so there was almost a feeling of Tillerson coming not only not to cement a new great friendly relationship, but almost having to prevent clashes, confrontation, potentially even of a military variety. In the end, what you got was something sort of in between, as I called it in the piece for the New Yorker's website, a kind of milquetoast summit where Tillerson neither smiled, shook hands, and created a great and lasting friendship, and also nothing particularly bellicose or kind of acutely hostile in terms of crisis or confrontation. What you had really, in a way, resembled a lot of the meetings that Lavrov had with Obama's secretaries of state, Clinton and John Kerry, this expression of a desire to work together, and then a list of a whole bunch of specific issues on which Russia and the United States don't agree, including the Russian operation to try and influence the 2016 presidential election, Syria, a whole host of other issues. So much like we're seeing in a kind of macro sense, as Trump begins to look more and more on certain foreign policy questions, kind of like an establishment political figure, in a way, relations with Russia are also reverting to form.
There's been a lot of talk here about a new Cold War. And in fact, in a piece that you wrote a couple of weeks ago with Evan Osnos and David Remnick, that was part of the headline. Is that how Putin sees it?
I think, you know, Putin sees relations with the United States as part of a very long, almost kind of eternal or infinite superpower struggle. For him, this notion that one administration, one personality or set of personalities will somehow fundamentally alter U.S. foreign policy and the nature of the U.S.-Russian relationship, I think he's actually much more reserved and skeptical on that front, and sees the disagreements, sees the rivalries with the United States in the here and now as part of a very long continuum with, you know, what in Russia is called the main adversary, the United States.
And what about this very difficult question of interfering in the U.S. election? Tillerson said before he left for Moscow that Russia should confess that it had done this. Did he raise it with Putin?
We don't know. Tillerson continued his tradition of not being particularly press accessible. I mean, not that press would have been allowed into his meeting with Putin, but he did sort of make a break for the Kremlin from his hotel in Moscow, leaving the press pool behind, and didn't really speak in anything other than vague terms about the content of his meetings with Putin or Lavrov. You know, we got a lot of the kind of diplomatic platitudes we're used to after such meetings. So we don't really know what he talked to Putin about for about 2 hours on Wednesday. I do believe he suggested it came up in his talks with Lavrov. I'm not really sure what the Russians might have to say on that score other than a kind of pat rote denial or simply just staring back in silence. Certainly the Russian officials are going to be watching closely the continued development and outcome of these various investigations in the United States. Those officials in the Kremlin, Putin himself, are very curious to see what degree of detail U.S. Congressmen and women, senators and FBI investigators are able to unearth.
And how worried is Putin about Trump's newfound appreciation of NATO?
You know, what I think Putin is worried about is Trump's basic, at this point, almost near total unpredictability. And I think that there's something between total confusion and total frustration in Moscow at this point in terms of what they're actually essentially being asked for from President Trump, what is being expected of them, what should they expect. But it's been a very whiplash week. Again, Putin himself was probably always a bit skeptical about how dramatic or different a Trump administration could be in terms of its policies to Russia. But I think even he didn't expect things to become this potentially or outwardly hostile so fast, and for the Trump administration to begin so quickly to resemble a lot of previous U.S. administrations that have had very unproductive relations with Russia. And I think Putin, you know, is preparing for just about any outcome with Trump. It could be grand rapprochement, or it could be a kind of armed confrontation, the likes we didn't see with Obama, under whom supposedly, as the Russians say, you know, relations were the worst that they've ever been.
I guess that's the note we should end on. Thank you so much, Josh.
Thanks for having me.
Joshua Yaffa is a journalist based in Russia. He contributes regularly to The New Yorker and is a fellow at the New America Foundation. This has been The Political Scene from The New Yorker. You can subscribe to this and other New Yorker podcasts by searching for The New Yorker in your podcast app and find more political analysis and commentary on newyorker.com. Feel free to rate and review The Political Scene on iTunes. This podcast is produced by Alex Barron for newyorker.com with help from Daniel Wenger. I'm Dorothy Wickenden.